Actually, I had like five sausages.
Big ones or those little links?
Those little tiny ones, they're so cute.
Then five is fine.
Yeah. Well, it's like you have one and then you have like five. That's like pretty much.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I proudly present to you, for your listening pleasure, We Heart Music Radio. Brought to you by the good people at WeHeartMusic.com.
Alright, so, you ready to start?
Yeah. Right here. Yeah, I'm dead today, so.
Hi, this is Val with We Heart Music Radio, and this is a continuation of the Cover Lover show. This week we have my favorite Christina.
Yay! I'm his cute. You're my favorite Vo. You're the only Vo
the
I know. Actually did a recording of this Cover Lover thing, but at the time we were just not prepared. But this time, We're sort of prepared.
so we're gonna start up with the Grace Jones cover of the Joy Division song "She's Lost Control." Well, anyway, if you don't know the original song, this is a song about a girl who suffers from epileptic seizures, which is actually what Ian Curtis suffers from.
Confusion in her eyes, it says it all. She's lost control, and she's clinging to the nearest passerby. She's lost control, and she gave away the secrets of her past. Said I lost control again, and of a voice that told her when and where to act. She said I lost control again.
You know, the thing with Ian Curtis is that he has this very hypnotic kind of vocals, and if you're not a
Me,
fan of that,
vocals.
yeah,
Yes, I'm not.
if you're not a fan of that, you're never gonna like Joy Division. But yeah, Grace Jones, what is it about the song that you like, Christina?
I think that when she sings it, she takes over the song. I really like that she did that. She just didn't sing along to. She sort of changed the lyrics and she turns it into "I've lost control" at some point. So it's not about someone with epilepsy. It's more about Grace Jones kicking your ass. So that's great for me. I just really like how she changed it around too. She didn't make it sound exactly the same, which is always a problem I have with covers. I mean, if I want to listen to that, I'll listen to the original. But hers has a reggae beat, and it's slower, and it's super long, because the original has to be, what, 3 or 4 minutes long, and hers is 8 minutes long.
Yeah, I'll give you some example. The original lyrics for the song is "She turned around and took my hand." Well, she sings it the way she's Grace Jones sing it. Is she turned around and she stabbed my hand.
Yeah, I knew she did that. I knew she did that. There was little subtle changes that were exciting. And again, that's why I'm saying epilepsy out the window. This is about Grace Jones kicking your ass because she's very angry at you.
So that's pretty
I
interesting.
think she brings feeling to it too because Ian Curtis sounds somewhat robotic.
Right. Like I
So.
said, hypnotic, robotic, kind of like this kind of monotone kind of. I mean, I won't say anything bad about the guy because he definitely has his moments, you know. But yeah, but his version seems kind of almost kind of not that good. You know what I mean?
I was aware of that song and I liked elements of it, but I never really, really liked it. And then I heard Grace Jones's and I thought, wow, this is really cool. This is much better. Plus, I just like Grace Jones. I mean, I think if you grew up around the 80s, it's hard not to have remembered her in all these movies where she was always kicking everybody's ass.
Yeah, I remember she was in Conan 2. Yeah, and I think in the 80s she was like pretty much everywhere. And then I don't know, I just didn't see her anymore.
Yeah, she was a model, you know? And she was a muse and a singer and lots of things. Really interesting. And kind of nutty, I hear too, but that's okay.
Well, if you hear the song She's Out of Control, you'll know exactly. The next song that I have on here is you had picked this tango song from Bimbo Jet.
Well, it's actually a disco song.
It was released in 1974 in France, and then in 1975 it was released in the UK, and it was a huge hit for this band, this French disco pop band called Bimbo Jet. And the song was El Bimbo, and
The lyrics that they've added aren't Spanish.
actually, I did get to listen to that, and yeah, the guy's like, "Abale, El Bimbo," and like, it's very, it sounds like as if it's like an outtake from somebody talking, and then they just kind of put it to music.
Bailemos el bimbo.
Yeah, it's a little cheesy with the lyrics, I'll admit. And there's a piano version by also a Frenchman, Paul Mariat, I think his name is. Yeah, there's that one's famous as well. And he's like a famous pianist. I don't know if he plays it on his own or also with an orchestra. I think he might. So that version is also very known. But the version that I know this from is, I forget the band who does it, but it's, you know, from the Police Academy movie.
It says on Wikipedia that El Bimbo was popularized by street musician Paul.
Paul Mariat, that guy.
Right.
But he plays piano. Oh, whatever.
They
Okay,
said
yeah,
that,
him.
yeah, I guess that was the song that was used in all four of the seven Police Academy films.
Okay, we don't know. Can we say we don't know? He said that it could be Paul Mariat or this Dompierre guy.
Well, apparently Wikipedia is the has failed us, and
And these people are like, it's this one, it's this one, we know.
all right. Well, all I know is that melody is definitely from originally from the Afghan musician, as she says that.
But it's I think he was an Afghan musician, but I think his music was written in, well, the lyrics were written in Farsi, so I think he performed in Iran. I don't know too much about him. He was rather handsome, good hair.
By the way, the song's called the original song's called Tanha Sadham Tanha.
Yeah, I know. I was gonna try that too. Glad you tried it.
And yeah, that's one of those little trivias that did you know that he was basically a victim of a political assassination?
On his birthday, that's so rude.
Yeah, I guess his father was like the prime minister of Afghanistan, and there was a lot of unrest, and yeah, that is kind of rude, actually. Can't he just be happy for this one day?
And kill him the day after his birthday or something? What? No. Poor guy, that sucks.
از بس که خوردم خون دل چون باش از روا شدم تنها شدم آسود از هوا شدم از بس که خوردم خون دل چون باش از روا
The next song you picked is Fallen in Love. And I actually, you know, the first time you said this, I actually thought you were talking about Elvis Presley's Can't Help Falling in Love.
Really? No. No.
Totally different.
Although I like that song. That's a good one. But no.
Yeah, this version is actually from like an old 1930s German song.
Yeah, well, that was translated into English.
I'm going to attempt to pronounce the German song.
You love doing that. You love it. Go for it.
The German song by Friedrich Holländer is Ich bin von Kopf bis Fuß auf Lieb eingestellt. Sounds good?
Yeah, very good. Well, the Ich bin was very good. I knew what you were saying, and then afterwards I got lost.
Well, anyway. So yeah, the English lyrics are actually not even a translation of the German song, but I guess the most famous band who's covered the song is the Beatles, which was never officially commercially released because they done it live.
Were the most famous band, but it's not someone you associate them with, because when you associate someone with that song, you associate Marlene Dietrich, who is the first person who sang it in German, I think, in The Blue Angel, her breakout movie. So that's who usually gets associated with it. And then apparently, I forgot what his name is, Kevin.
Ayers?
Yeah, him. He gets associated with it too. His version's interesting. Now, I don't love it, but it's a little different.
Falling in love again, I never wanted to. But what am I to do? I can't help it. Love's always been my game, play it how I may. I was made that way, I can't help it. Girls flutter to me like moths around a flame. And if their wings burn, I am not to blame. I'm just falling in love again.
But yeah, I can't think of anyone else, because everybody else just, a lot of people cover it.
All right, I'll tell you who recently covered it is Christina Aguilera.
That was my name, my raspberry to that.
And she did a really bad, like, dance version of the song, and it's, wow, it's very different. Let's just put it that way. It's you know, obviously she has to appeal to her fans, which is you know, more dance centric.
But she can do ballads. Actually, had she done it as a ballad and sort of just tweaked it a little, it would work because her fans like that as well. So she didn't really have to do a dance version of it.
Yeah, she recorded it for the movie The Spirit, directed by Frank Miller, which was awful, by the way. The covers I've heard like is it Nina Simone's version, and also Claudine Longuette's version, and they
I haven't heard Nina Simone's, but yeah, I heard Claudine Longuette. I heard hers, and I thought it was very different. Also, it was really, I don't know what you expect from a French singer. She's French Canadian, but the sort of sweet soft sounds of French pop. Yeah, it was nice. It wasn't, you know.
I think it's a little loungy with a little jazz kind of feel to it. This is the kind of thing you find like a nightclub with, you know, candles and...
No, it did have a jazz feel, but didn't it have like a weird little country vibe too? You know what I'm talking about? It was a little... At some point I thought, hey, shouldn't this be playing on one of those pianos that plays by itself? I don't know. It had a jazzy feel to it, but it sort of had I don't know, like white people jazz, like that toned down. You know what I'm talking about, right? That super toned down jazz, and then just these elements of I don't know what type of music, but some sort of Western music, but just a slight bit of it. And I thought, well, it was interesting. Did you know that she murdered her boyfriend?
Yes, actually. I think she claimed that it was an accident.
She got off, but apparently forensics says no.
I personally think she did murder him, because I think he was some skier. He was some hot buff.
He was an Olympic guy.
Right. And then, yeah, I think she caught him cheating with someone else, and I think she shot him and killed him. But yeah, I mean, that was the end of her career by that time.
That ruined her career. That pretty much killed her career, because she was still relatively young, and she was sort of building up. I think she'd put out maybe two albums or something, so she could have kept going. But that pretty much killed it right there.
God help it. Love's always been my game. Play it how I may. I was made that way. God help it. Men cluster to me like moths around the flame.
Can I say she's a hot babe?
you can absolutely say she's a hot babe, because a lot of murderers are hot. No, not really, but maybe half of them.
Anyway. But your choice of cover is actually the Addicts version, which is kind of like a punk band from the 80s.
They started in the 70s, and they're still around. They actually played here about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, crazy. Did you go see them?
No, because I was sick. Like, the flu, so I couldn't go. Awful. So they were here, and I don't know how old that man is, but he's got to be at least 50, I would guess, the lead singer, because he's the one who's consistently been with the band. They've had lots of members. But they have this whole droogie thing going on. You've seen them, right?
Yeah, the Clockwork Orange kind of.
Yeah.
The original song was released on a 12-inch in 1985 under the name ADX, which I guess Addicts, if you can pronounce it.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, but their version, I did listen to it. It sounds very synthy, but maybe that's.
I love that. No, you're right. That's kind of what I like. But it doesn't sound like a lot of their songs at all. It sounds a lot. I guess that's why they put it on a B-side too, and they just didn't include it, because their stuff is really short and very, very punk, with elements of pop sometimes, but this is really long, and they had a singer in the back, and a lot of synth. It doesn't sound that much like them. I think it sounds great. So.
Yeah, they made it out like it's like a new wave song, but it could be just because the 80s was, you know, kind of like that sound of that time. Yeah, so, yeah, if you don't mind, we should just end your segment with that song. It's a little long. You're right. I mean, it's like, is it 6 minutes or something? Or
I thought it was almost like four, or maybe more. Or it feels like it's four, but it might be five or six. You're right. Oh, what do I know? What do I know? What do you know? What do we know?
No, that's great. I mean, because most typical punk songs are about like 2 minutes at best, you know?
Yeah, I know. When I think, what was the longest Misfits song? 3 minutes? No, it could be 3 or 4, but I remember I used to love, I don't know if it was the Blood Feast song, but one of them I used to love, and it was the longest song they ever had. And the Addicts are the same way. You're done. Like, I thought, like, wow, I can use this as a ringtone, and I've already used half the song in 30 seconds. I've heard it's done.
I think a lot of that shortness has to do with, because a lot of punk songs are kind of played fast and they play it furious and you know, and lyrics aren't really their strong point. So a lot of lyrics are pretty like short too. And, but yeah, so once, you know, you can't.
But they're more fun that way, I think, because the lyrics can be so silly. I think one of my favorite Damn song is Stab Your Back. And all they say is stab your back. That's a lot of stabbing back in that one, and I love it. So
anyway, so speaking of actually punk song, the Buzzcocks song, Ever Falling in Love with Someone You Shouldn't Have, is, you know, like a typical punk song. It's short, it's fast.
Fun, and I think it's poppy, though.
It's very poppy.
It's not a rough punk song, and I think, you know, I think anybody, you have to be a really crappy band not to be able to cover this song, because it works very well.
Right.
Because I heard other versions of it, and it's just a good song.
Oh, it is, and I think if you break it down, I think it's a fairly simple song to play. Anyway, so the Fine Young Cannibals recorded their version of the song originally from The Raw and The Cook, their second album. But they actually had done it a few years before the album, and for a soundtrack called Something Wild. And what I love about this version is, obviously, I think Roland's very unique singing style that he adds to it.
I think it sounds really good, just because it's immediately it sounds like them, partly because of his voice, but they also had a type of sound to their pop where you kind of recognize them. And I thought it worked really, really well with the song. As soon as I started listening to it, I was like, wow, this is really, really good. Not that I have a problem with the Fine Young Cannibals. A lot of people love making fun of them. I don't have a problem with them, but I was impressed how nice they worked it.
Yeah, I remember the first time I heard it, and it sounds so familiar to me. I'm like, I've heard this song before. And what they do well here is that they kind of disguise it so that it's not a Buzzcock song. And I think that's what's great about it. So did you want to do Sweet Child of Mine at all, or?
Did you want to do it? It's up to you. It's your song. I think I think it's fine. I think it's sweet, actually. Because the only other version of Sweet Child of Mine that I know that's been recorded is that horrible Sheryl Crow version, which sounds, like I told you, sounds like a douche commercial. It's like a softer version of the Guns N' Roses version. It did nothing for me. Version of it, so I think it achieves what it went for. It's not bad. I don't absolutely love it, but I think it's pretty decent. It's another take on the song.
Right, and Luna has always known for this kind of like dream pop, kind of sweet, kind of slow type of music. And so when you hear the singer Dean reminisce over his lost love and Sweet Child of Mine, you know, you really feel for him. And it's kind of like, if you had never heard of the original Guns N' Roses song, you would probably like, hey, this is my favorite song ever. And then, you know, and that's what I like when covers are done where it's completely off, you know, not so much a carbon copy of the original song, but kind of their own spin to it. That's what I love about the covers.
She got a smile, well, it seems to me, reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as the bright blue sky.
But if you want, actually, in recently, the song's been covered on another, Appetite for Destruction album. I'll send you a copy of it because it's actually free. The singer, his name is Mark Malman, decided to go in the studio and recorded this whole album, and he didn't get the rights to do the covers. And so the lawyers for Guns N' Roses had a cease and desist from selling it. So it was like, well, that I'll just give it for free. And it contains kind of like a weird keyboard version of Sweet Child of Mine, and I think you'll like it.
I'd like to listen to that then, yeah, because I do like the original song to begin with.
That's politicals.
Yeah, super into them.
I went to see a band called State Radio. Have you heard of this band?
No.
You know what a crusty band is? Like, you know, the Levelers, bands like that?
No.
They, you know, they live off the earth. They love the trees. They're all about peace and, you know.
Oh, It was bad.
And they're all like about political movements and, you know, they're, you know, like sign this petition kind of ban.
That's fine.
Okay,
that's,
yeah.
That's fine. It's not my thing, but fine.
Yeah, I call them crusty bands because I think that's the term that was used in the 90s.
Really?
Yeah, crusties. Yeah, they all play like Glastonbury and they all like dance in the mud and stuff.
Oh, ew. But yeah, I don't know. I didn't know that that's what they were called. Okay.
Yeah, and they don't shower. That's why they call crusty. Anyway.
Yeah.
Did you remember that band with the maybe the he or she? It's a he, I think, and he has like a nose ring, but with a chain that goes all the way around.
Oh my God! No, the way from the 90s, from the early 90s, that
yeah.
Lady. That's lady. The don't wanna fall in love song from
yeah.
the 90s. Oh my God, I do, and it's a lady, by the way.
I'm sorry. That was a very feminine young man. Sorry.
No, it's a woman with an aggressive haircut that I guess
yes.
might make her look a bit masculine if you don't pay attention to her. But her voice was very feminine.
Did you watch the Fighter, by the way? It's based on a true
Not
story
yet.
About two brothers. Like one of them is a little older who plays Christian Bale plays his part, and he had a title match with who's that sting like a bee, float like a butterfly guy? Muhammad Ali. Like he had a match with him. I don't know if he won. I think he lost, but that was his big moment. And the whole film is about kind of like Christian Bale's character, like kind of never.
Oh, he never gets over it?
Yeah, he never gets
like,
over
He's like and... Jerry Only from The Misfits.
Right. And, but his brother, another boxer, has a different boxing style, and he's not hit his stride yet. And but basically, kind of Christian Bale's character is kind of holding him back kind of thing. But, yeah, but definitely the main character is Mark Wahlberg's, fighter.
Too bad Mark Wahlberg.
By the way, if you watch that movie, you should – listen to the soundtrack. It's really good. They use the band The Heavy at all?
No.
They use their song for the title intro, and it sounds amazing. And if you get a chance to listen, you've heard of the song, I'm sure.
I have because I hear a lot of songs just randomly being played, and I don't know who it is ever.
All right, I'll sing you a snippet of it, but...
Oh, please do! Come on. This doesn't mean that I may actually guess it.
Anyway, so The Heavy.
Go for it.
The Heavy. Vogue's rendition of The Heavy. So, how do you like me now? Bam! How do you like me now? Bam! How you like me now? How do you like me now? No?
No, still. No.
We can talk about that. Do you like Richard Cheese at all?
I'm fine with Richard Cheese.
Okay.
I'm fine. Everything he does is fine. I actually like this song particularly because it's loungy, but it sounds romantic, which is something I never thought about Ice Ice Baby ever sounding like. But I don't know what he did with it, but it's slow, and I'm And I think, why does this start sounding romantic to me until he starts kicking it in, you know, in the chorus, and you're like, well, he's getting tough. It's silly.
Yeah, so the song you're referring to is his cover of Vanilla Ice, Ice Ice Baby. And it's really good. I think if you take it and put it standing apart from just the original, it could be like a great pop song that you would hear on the radio, you know, Ice Ice Baby, you know, like, it's very, you know. And the thing with Richard Cheese is he loungified every song that he covers, you know.
But what I liked is it just doesn't sound like a typical lounge song. It sounds a bit more romantic and slow, I think. You know, sometimes people just turn a song into a lounge song and they all sound the same.
Right, right.
And I don't think he did that with this song.
Yeah, I guess not really much to add. That's why I didn't really want to bring it up, because I think it's a great song.
All right, stop, collaborate and listen. Ice is back with my brand new invention. Something grabs a hold of me tightly. I flow like a harpoon daily and nightly. Will it ever stop? Yo, I don't know. Turn off the lights and I'll glow. Extreme, I rock a mic like a vandal. Light up a stage and wax a chump like a candle. Ice, ice, baby.
I saw The Runaways finally. Did you see it?
No, I don't think I want to see it. It's that movie where they, obviously, The Runaways. But who's the famous girl?
Joan Jett.
Joan Jett. And, so is it all about like young girls and sluts and stuff like
no.
that? Or?
No, yeah. But I think that if it would be, I think a lot of boys would want to watch it. I thought that's what boys like to watch. But no, it was just about their experience, how they got the band together, how they wrote their songs, how when they toured in Japan, because they were huge in Japan.
Yeah, big.
And yeah, and how the band broke apart, and then the end of it is Joan's already, it's early 80s, and Joan's already famous on her own. And
yeah, she had the like, rock and roll song, right? I love rock and roll.
Yeah, so with that, so that's the end of it, because Joan Jett did produce the movie, so.
It's a little slanted, you're saying?
Well, most of the movie has to do with Joan's view and Cherie Curry, the lead singer. The rest
of the
Twilight band,
girl. Right.
Yeah, the rest of the band, whatever.
Right.
You see a bit of the drummer, but that's it. Lita Ford was the lead guitarist, and Lita Ford had a really successful career in the 80s, and she's there just being bitchy to the lead singer because they didn't get along, and that's about it. They don't really go into her side of it, her life, how she felt about things. And they had asked their bassist if she would, you know, allow, you know, her name and I guess her likeness or whatever for the movie, and she declined. So pretty much they got the girl from Arrested Development. And she stands there, and you see her standing around a couple of times, and she says nothing. And that's it. So it wasn't exactly the Runaways. It was like Joan and Cherie. You know, it was just pretty much about them. And they didn't set this up right for me, because I knew a bit about the band, but I didn't know tons. Cherie is a twin. I didn't know this. So, like, they have her sister there. Her sister's like, why are you going away? Wee, wee. And then they're very close. I figured they were close in age because Cherie's played by Dakota Fanning. And then the girl who plays her twin doesn't really look like her. Right, so I just think that, you know, they're close in age. And then the girl who plays the twin gets the same haircut as Dakota Fanning. I'm like, this is really weird. This is really, really weird, but it's because they were twins, which you really would not know.
Huh.
Unless you knew about it beforehand, you'd be like, that's really weird that her sister got the same haircut as her.
You know what? I've heard interviews with members of the band before, and from what I remember, it's they're talking about the management and people, like, basically just really a sleazy, they all want to stuff like that. And I thought it was very, I mean, from, this is a few years ago before, is that movie at all really dirty and stuff like that?
The monster, it's not really dirty. You see them, like, sleep around with, like, they sleep around with guys or make out with guys, but it's never any nudity or anything. And then you see the thing between Joan and Cherie. They had a little love affair there. So you see them making out a couple times or whatever.
Oh, that's normal.
But which a lot of people were excited about, because they're like, Dakota Fanning kissing the girl from Twilight. I think people were very some young men might have been excited by that. I thought it was silly. No, it was all done really well, you know. It was all tasteful. Nothing was sleazy, but their manager was the biggest, creepiest, weirdest sleazeball ever.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Like, nobody liked the manager.
He used to do, at one point, practicing. He got them, like, a practicing space, which is this nasty freaking trailer that looks like it belonged to a homeless person in the middle of the woods. Then he gets a bunch of boys to come in, and he wants to train them to show them, like, you know, you're going to get heckled while you play, especially because you're girls in a band. So he gets these boys to come in and pick up everything they see, including, like, and then come in and start throwing it at them while they're playing.
Actually, that actually may be... actually may sound like it's a good training ground, isn't it? Or
no, I agree. It's not, it was useful, but no, he was, they made him out to be like a creepy guy, because he wore all this makeup and acted just weird. At first I thought he might just be a really, sort of eccentric, fabulous gay man, but he wasn't. He was just, like, a really sassy straight guy. It was weird. Yeah, he wore all this makeup, and I don't know. And he just acted like a big weirdo the whole time. But he was sleazy, and he didn't take care of them. He sent them away to Japan with some guy. He was, I guess, their tour manager. And then he's, like, sleeping with them, and they're 15, 16-year-old girls. Yeah, and he was 28, you know. So he sent them away. They barely had any food or anything. Also... the movie doesn't show you enough about it, but if you watch a documentary or read up, he made it impossible that they got to know each other so he could control them.
Right.
The first manager, the weirdo, so that he could keep them under control and put fear into them. He never let them develop friendships amongst each other. You know, some of them didn't get along with each other, or they actually never, the bassist, I think she said that she wasn't really friends with anyone there. She sort of got along with them, but didn't. And she really wasn't their friend. You know, and Cherie and Lita hated each other. And then, you know, so they never were a complete band where they could be, well, this manager's taking advantage of us. We're going to dump his ass and we're going to do whatever. I think towards the end, once Cherie left, I think they did sever their relationship with management and went on their own. And I think that's when Joan was singing for the band. But, he did a lot of stuff to them, and there were some in, if you watch, it's on Netflix on streaming, it's Edge Play, which is a documentary about the band. There's something about possible sexual abuse and stuff like that, that he actually did some stuff to them or, like, physically abused them, and that he definitely, like, they feel like they were mentally abused by him.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the gist that of what I got about their management, because I don't know if it was the bassist or whoever that didn't name it, but she was very like this man destroyed my life, kind of like attitude.
It might have been Cherie.
Okay.
It might have been Cherie, yeah.
Because yeah, there was nothing good about you know, no love lost there. Because
she said something about he should have been shot.
Right, right. The very yep.
Yeah, so. So yeah, but you don't, you get from the movie that he's kind of a jerk to them, and that he's rough with them. He is really rough with them, and that he's kind of irresponsible. He has them play at a house party, but it's a house they crashed into. They don't even know who it belongs to. They just have they take over somebody's house and throw a party, and then the cops are coming. So he's really irresponsible. He doesn't really take care of them. He's not giving them enough money. He's not giving them the money that's due to them. You know, and he's kind of like a big, pervy, weird freak. But it could have, I think from what they say, they could have shown a lot of a lot worse, and they didn't in the movie. It's okay. I thought it was okay. It wasn't, like, brilliant because, as I said, they didn't really go into the rest of the band, how the rest of the band felt. It was pretty much the, you know, Cherie and Joan. And Joan, you know, Joan would write most of the songs, and Cherie was the performer, so. But, yeah, I don't know. I liked it. For what it was, I thought it was fine. It wasn't great, but it was fine.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of real movies that's based on real life, but you recommend it, though?
I would recommend it because if you like punk, or if you like bands, or if you like to see how the scene was back then, that it's worth it for that, you know.
Can't stay at home.
You know, there's a movie I saw a few years ago called The Fabulous Stains. Have you seen this?
Yeah, I have. And if you watch The Stains, you could totally watch this because
it's very
sort
similar,
of
right?
Similar idea. Except, you know, at the end, the stains sell out.
Right. Yeah. They recorded that big hit song.
Which wasn't even their song.
No, it wasn't.
Stole it was from the punk band.
They stole it from the punk band. Do you remember the punk band's name by any chance?
The Professionals.
The Professionals, right.
And that was the song, Be a Professional.
We are the Professional.
Every day for a year, wouldn't even need me going there. A shot in the heart, secretly for me. And do they really have a say of what goes on with you each day? Does your country mean to you? Who knows what you're gonna see?
Not me, not me.
Who knows when your turn will be?
Not me.
Join the professionals. Be a professional. Join the professionals today.
No, I like it cold. I don't know. I can't sleep when it's too hot. So,
Oh, me neither. It can't be too hot, but it can't be too cold because my feet are cold. I can't sleep till they get warm, and it could be like an hour. I'm one of those people with really like cold hands and feet.
Well, that's something I've learned about you. You know what you do is just wear socks and gloves to bed, and you're fine.
I always wear socks, and they'll still be freezing, and my hands too. You know, the other day it wasn't really that cold. It was like 50-something, and I had gloves on, and somebody's like, my God, you're wearing gloves, and they took my gloves off, and I touched their face, and they were like, oh, my face. My hands are always, always cold.
Very much harder than mine. Can you sleep when I grind my teeth? Do you look away if I slob when I eat? Will you let me be myself? Can you at all times wear socks because I'm still scared of feet? And if I fall, would you pick me up? If I fall, oh, would you pick me up? Do you talk in the middle of Seinfeld? Do you read more than 2 books a month? Do you get racist or sexist when you've had a few? Is it fine if I make more money than you? Have you slept with any people I work?